Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gatehouse Florida. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson. And joining me as always is Gatehouse Florida Capitol correspondent John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hello, Zach.
Well, President Donald Trump arrives in Florida today for an event in the Villages retirement community. Meanwhile, Florida Senate President Bill Galvano is promising to have a frank discussion on gun violence in his chamber and consider solutions that could include more background checks. We'll talk about that and a big court date next week in the battle over felons' voting rights. But first, you all know what that music means. It's time to pick a number. John, you keep going lower and lower and lower with your numbers. I'm worried this week we're going to be in the negative territory.
No worry. Well, I'm back into the realm of decimal places this week. I've been successfully, keeping things fairly simple and compact. But my number now is 6.2.
6.2. All right. Throwing a decimal in there to mix it up.
Absolutely.
All right. And my number is 39 this week. So that's a 6.2 for John Kennedy and a 39 for me. Write those numbers down and we'll tell you what they mean for Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, Washington, D.C. is not the most pleasant place for Donald Trump right now, what with all the talk about impeaching him and kicking him out of office. But when the chips are down, Trump can always count on a friendly reception in places like the Villages, the mega retirement community north of Orlando that has been a favorite stop for Republican leaders over the years. The Villages is chock full of the type of voters who pretty much adore Trump. They're older and mostly white, and they're a good audience for him to try out his impeachment defense if he decides to stray from the official purpose of his trip, which is promoting his healthcare agenda. But we all know Trump loves to go off script, so we'll see if he makes some news on the impeachment front today. I haven't seen any Florida polling on impeachment, but national polls show more people support the idea after last week when a whistleblower complaint was released alleging Trump abused his power by trying to pressure Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden, a top political rival. How the impeachment issue plays in Florida could be absolutely critical to Trump's reelection. The president won Florida by a narrow margin in 2016, and the state is considered a must-win for him in 2020. Many Florida Democrats have been cautious about calling for impeachment, wary that the issue might not bear political fruit here in Florida. But after the Ukraine controversy was revealed, Florida Democrats have been more willing to go after Trump, and all 13 Democratic members of Florida's congressional delegation are now on record supporting the impeachment inquiry. John, we don't know what Trump is going to say today in the Villages, but this trip clearly looks like an effort to shore up his support in Florida as he enters a perilous period for his presidency. Have you seen any cracks in Trump's support in the Sunshine State so far?
Well, as you pointed out, we haven't really seen any Florida-specific polling on opinions about impeachment, but it's likely tracks national findings, which seem to hover in the high 40% supporting starting impeachment proceedings. That's not a majority, but it's up from what had been in the low 40s, at their highest point about a year ago when the Mueller investigation was still moving forward. A very recent Morning Consult poll just this week showed that among the 41% of voters who approve Trump's job performance, 88% think he shouldn't be impeached. Now, that's kind of a Villages crowd right there, probably. Trump's approval rating is a distinct minority. Far more Americans disapprove of the job's performance of the president, but the turnout at the Villages is certain to be in the Trump camp, although often overlooked about this sprawling retirement community is that there are a lot of Democrats that live there too. But there are certainly more people that would choose red golf carts over blue golf carts in the Villages, and there's even going to be a golf cart parade upon Trump's arrival in the Villages today to greet him. But remember, this Villages trip was rescheduled from August when Trump postponed it because of the mass shootings in Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas. So here we are with the impeachment inquiry beginning, and we face another dividing line among Americans, and certainly Floridians have chosen sides.
Yeah, and if Trump is looking for some support here, the Villages is a perfect place to go. And he's also being greeted by the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, who owes a large part of his victory to Trump. What do you make of DeSantis going there? I mean, he obviously doesn't think that the president is he's standing behind him right now, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's an interesting time for DeSantis, who many think owe his victory in the narrowest governor's race in Florida history to Trump support. Remember, Trump made two visits to Florida in the last week of last year's campaign, and that certainly helped DeSantis. And now the governor, who is getting relatively high approval numbers, maybe because he has taken some, you know, kind of seemingly centrist positions, he just lent his name last week to a Florida Republican Party Presidential Protection Fund mailer. This is apparently a legal collection fund to defend the president. And in his pitch to potential contributors, DeSantis used very Trump-like language, saying that while in Congress, he fought Democratic witch hunts all the time, and he called the impeachment inquiry a disgusting attempt to overturn a legitimate U.S. election. So it looks like, you know, with a single email, you can forget about DeSantis's middle-of-the-road move or his comments from earlier this summer when he downplayed how much he expected to be involved in the president's reelection campaign. It looks like he's all in, and he'll be there with Trump in the villages.
Yeah, you know, as you pointed out, I mean, DeSantis has really, even though he was known as a pretty partisan, you know, warrior when he was in Congress, when he got elected to the governor, he was able to kind of make a different type of first impression on voters by appealing to folks on both sides of the aisles with some bipartisan proposals. But I guess when it comes down to impeaching the president, there's really only two sides that you can be on, and he's gone all in support of Trump. He obviously seems to think that there's more to gain from backing him than from distancing himself at this point. And obviously in the villages, it's going to be a pretty friendly crowd. So we'll see, you know, how, as this impeachment talk ramps up, if DeSantis continues to be a vocal defender, or if he's just trying to be on record with the president supporting him. But a pretty interesting political event going on here in Florida today. Well, with impeachment consuming Washington, D.C., the odds of passing meaningful legislation, which already were very, very low, have plummeted even further. But here in Florida, state lawmakers are gearing up for the 2020 legislative session, which begins in January. And there's always big bills that pass the Florida legislature every year. This week, I sat down with Florida Senate President Bill Galvano to talk about his priorities for the 2020 legislative session. It's still early, and Galvano spoke mostly in broad outlines, but he had a few interesting things to say on issues such as guns and water quality. And maybe the most noteworthy thing that Galvano said to me is that he is open to expanding background checks on folks who purchase guns. That's a big priority for gun control activists and an issue that has been that they've been pushing really hard at the federal level. And impeachment makes it a lot less likely that a gun bill makes it to Trump and gets signed into law. But Galvano has made a very strong statement about addressing gun violence after the mass shootings in El Paso and Ohio that John mentioned earlier. Right after that, Galvano came out and he said there needs to be some type of action. And he reiterated that belief to me this week. I asked him about the recent arrest of a white nationalist in Brandon, which is in Hillsborough County. I think it's just north of Galvano's Senate district. And I asked him if a resolution condemning white nationalism will be one of the first things that the Senate passes. That resolution has been proposed, and Galvano said after the El Paso shooting that he wanted to look at white nationalism as a cause for some of these shootings. If you'll recall, the shooter there said that he wanted to target Hispanics. So I asked Galvano about that resolution, and he said, yeah, we're going to pass that. And he thinks it's probably going to be pretty early, but he wants to go further than just passing resolutions. Here's what he said.
Thoughts and prayers require, must yield action. Resolutions are important, don't get me wrong. Making a statement of where we are, But I think it's more important to incorporate that position into something that, that also will yield action.
So Galvano wants action, but what that looks like is hard to gauge right now. He convened a Senate committee hearing recently that John covered. It was aimed at discussing the causes of mass shootings and ways to prevent them. And the hearing was criticized by some gun control activists because there weren't many folks talking about guns there. The gun issue didn't come up despite this being a hearing about mass shootings. But committee chair Tom Lee did say afterwards that he's open to more background checks. And Galvano told me the same thing this week. He also said he is supportive of expanding Florida's red flag law, which allows law enforcement to petition a judge to seize guns from troubled individuals. Here's what he had to say about that.
We definitely need to revisit the red flag law and see if there are ways that we can expand it that within the parameters of the law to make it even more effective. It's been utilized successfully many, many times. And I do think that expanded background checks are something that we should take a very, very serious look at and not dismiss out of the gate.
So, John, we spoke after that committee hearing, and there was questions about, you know, whether that was going to be a one-off hearing, whether Galvano was just trying to maybe, you know, get out there and sort of look like he's taking this seriously. But there was maybe some questions about whether this could sort of fade away if it loses political momentum. The farther you get away from these mass shootings, the less pressure there seems to be to do something. But Florida's a little bit different. We had the horrific shooting in Parkland, and it seems like Galvano is committed to doing something here. And it's kind of a significant statement that he says he's open to the idea of expanding background checks. That's a pretty big priority for a lot of gun control activists. What do you make of his comments?
Yeah. Oh, well, it's remarkable. If Galvano does go down the road of pushing the Senate to expand the state's red flag laws and the and strengthen background checks, that is an open defiance by a Republican leader of National Rifle Association positions. You know, as you pointed out, we heard the chairman of this Infrastructure and Security Committee, Tom Lee, earlier say that he would probably support these steps. So maybe that was an early signal that this would be the direction that Galvano wanted to see the Senate head. Now, these are, you know, fairly big steps for Republicans. It would probably be a very close vote in the Senate, especially in an election year when half the seats in the chamber are up for re-election. And the other unknown in all this is what happens to this legislation, even if it gets out of the Senate. The House hasn't joined in with Galvano's call for action after the mass shootings of this summer. And Governor DeSantis also, you know, he has not wavered in his allegiance to the NRA's view of gun rights. Remember, he campaigned last year saying that he would have vetoed the steps taken after the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, which included increasing the age to buy any gun from 18 to 21. So, you know, it Galvano, he's term limited, so he's not going to be on the ballot next year. So he seems to be thinking outside the Republican box right now.
Yeah, you make a good point that the Senate is just one aspect of where this legislation would need to advance. And DeSantis has been pretty resolute and saying that he's not really interested in new gun control measures. Speaker Oliva doesn't seem all that interested, but Oliva did support some of these new gun control measures after Parkland. Obviously, Parkland, you know, being in Florida, there was a huge outcry and a lot of pressure to respond. I'm not sure that Oliva would feel the same pressure after shootings in Texas and Ohio. And obviously, if the governor is not open to this, you wonder if Oliva would say, what's the point? But it definitely seems like, you know, Galvano seems to be taking this very seriously. He seems genuinely concerned about gun violence and trying to address it in a way that could potentially get some traction in the legislature. So the issue definitely seems like it's in play heading into the legislative session, and some fairly significant gun control reforms seem like they're in play if they're talking about background checks. Well, lastly, there are a number of new developments in the ongoing battle over felons' voting rights. Just to quickly recap, Floridians approved a constitutional amendment restoring voting rights for most felons who complete all the terms of their sentences. Then the legislature weighed in this year with an implementing bill that voting rights activists didn't like because it requires felons to repay all of their financial obligations before they can vote. That law is now being challenged in court, and there's a hearing on the case next week. Meanwhile, Florida's only statewide elected Democrat, Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried, is trying to get the State Clemency Board to relax its rules for restoring felons' voting rights. John, explain to us what all this could mean for felons who have done their time and want to vote.
Yeah, it seems hard to imagine that it's been 11 months since voters overwhelmingly approved Amendment 4, which, you know, allows those convicted of felonies to get their voting rights back and ends a more than 150-year prohibition in Florida on felons voting, without them at least going through a very lengthy clemency process. But the effort is still stymied, and here we are with the 2020 election fast approaching. Now, on Monday, a federal judge in Tallahassee is going to hold a hearing into a lawsuit that's been filed by a number of voter rights organizations, the ACLU, the NAACP, the Brennan Center at New York University. They intend to, they're trying to get the state law that was approved by the Republican-led legislature blocked, that allows felons to regain their rights only after paying any court fees, fines, and restitutions. These groups, and they're supported by a number of Democratic allies, that they say that these financial requirements are unconstitutional, that it violates equal protection and due process provisions of the U.S. Constitution. They also point to research that's been done by a University of Florida political scientist who says that with this financial standard in place, about 80% of an estimated 1.4 million eligible Floridians who are felons will not get their voting rights restored anytime soon.
Wow, 80%. That's a huge number.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that, you know, so it sort of negates the impact of Amendment 4. Now this mass of voters could prove pivotal in next year's elections, obviously, but Republicans are still defending this new law, saying that it effectively enacts what supporters of the amendment had promised voters, and that was that people would get their rights restored only when they completed terms of their sentence. And the Republicans are declaring that this financial element is part of that, especially, you know, if it's part of a court-ordered sentence. Now allied groups, though, see this as, you know, another stall tactic underway by Republicans. Governor DeSantis has asked the state Supreme Court to rule in the matter, and he is asking the federal judge to delay a trial on the lawsuit until after the state's high court decision comes down. Now, the justices aren't going to even hear arguments until November, and a ruling would likely come, you know, well after that. So at the same time, the legislature is asking that the federal lawsuit be outright dismissed, saying that it's groundless. Now, as you pointed out, Nikki Fried, the state's lone statewide Democratic office holder, she asked DeSantis and other Republican members of the cabinet to take up the idea of enacting a more lenient clemency standard, one that goes back to before 2010, when Charlie Crist, then a Republican, was governor. But the cabinet meeting she wanted to take this up at next week, well, that's been canceled, apparently for other reasons. But all told, there is mounting frustration and worry that felons will again be on the sideline when, you know, it comes to voting next year. Courts move very slowly, and time is clearly on the side of the Republican leadership in the state, which also has a long history of setting up what seem like hurdles to voting. They've done that in many instances through the years. So Democrats and their allies can only grumble right now, and that's what they'll be doing with a rally planned outside the Tallahassee Federal Courthouse on Monday. And that's the first day of what could be a several-day hearing on the lawsuit. that is looking to block this new pay before you vote law.
So the bottom line really is that a lot of folks who thought they were going to get their voting rights restored in advance of the 2020 election and campaigned for Amendment 4 may be having their rights tied up in these court cases for the foreseeable future. And that could have a significant impact on the election if you have a huge group of voters who is not able to cast ballots in 2020. It probably shouldn't be surprising for anyone that the passage of Amendment 4 did not really end this debate. We've seen that with a lot of other constitutional amendments in Florida in recent years. There's still litigation going on over the medical marijuana amendment and the legislature's implementing bill for that amendment. Land conservation amendment has been bitterly fought over since it passed. It's never over, even when it seems like voters have made their desires clear. Well, we're gonna move on to our final pick a number segment. John, your number was 6.2. You want to tell us what that's all about?
Yeah, sure. The 6.2 is the number of millions of dollars Miami healthcare executive Mike Fernandez has contributed so far to the ballot campaign All Voters Vote, which was the subject of a flurry of court action this week. Fernandez poured in his latest $700,000 investment the last week of September, and his $6.2 million is just $500,000 short of representing all the money raised by All Voters Vote, which is an initiative that wants to get a constitutional amendment before voters next year that would open primary elections to all voters, regardless of party affiliation. Now, this so-called jungle primary approach really rattles the state's political parties, and it's frankly one of the few things that both the Florida Democratic and Florida Republican Party agree on. They are both opposed to it and just filed briefs this week stating their opposition, because the Supreme Court now is at the point where they're going to be reviewing the ballot language to meet to make sure it basically meets standards that are, it's not misleading to voters or covers more than a single subject. Those are requirements that Florida has for getting something before voters. Basically, under All Voters Vote, the top two vote getters in a primary would proceed to the general election regardless of party affiliation. Now, only California and three other states currently have this system, but with the top two vote getters going forward, it does set up a situation where two candidates from the same party could be on the November ballot. But All Voters Vote, which wants to see this apply to the governor, cabinet, and legislative races, they see it as something that basically brings more candidates toward the middle. More centrist candidates. Fernandez is an interesting financier of this measure because he was an ardent Republican, a Cuban American who has made gazillions of dollars, first through health insurance and now through investing in healthcare companies. But he had a falling out with then Governor Rick Scott and then later left the Republican Party. And he found out in 2016 that he couldn't vote in the primaries that year. And with President Trump's election, Fernandez is even more intent on changing politics, with his goal being a system where candidates have a broader base of voters to appeal to rather than just what he sees as the extremes within each party. But this would change Florida political life as we know it. And that seems to be the driving, move that you have the party establishments on both sides lining up to try to keep the system as we know it still in place.
Yeah, it definitely would be a huge change for primaries in Florida. I love that Democrats and Republicans can finally agree on something, and that's that they don't want independents to weigh in on their elections. Turn on those guys. Anyway, my number is 39 percentage points is Trump's margin of victory in Sumter County, which is home to the Villages, where the president is today. That gives you a sense of why Trump is in the Villages today, when he's won the county by such huge margins. It's very, very friendly turf for him. And it's a critical part of his strategy for winning Florida again in 2020. He 2016 by running up the score in really Republican friendly areas of the state, like the villages, like Southwest Florida, like Northeast Florida, the Panhandle, rural areas, suburban areas. Hillary Clinton really actually did really well in some of the big cities. She did better than Obama in some of these urban counties. But Trump's strength in the suburbs and in the, you know, the rural parts of Florida was quite remarkable. And he's likely to follow the same playbook in 2020. Voter turnout in Sumter County was 84.4% in 2016. That's the third highest turnout of any county in the state. And you wonder, how could it get much higher? But I'm expecting Trump to try and push that turnout even higher in GOP friendly areas. And he should also benefit from huge growth in places like villages, which is the fastest growing master plan community in the entire country. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Cordy, Joseph Torzano, and Adam Fish. And thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.